Stop trying to control what I do to fit your life.
It's extremely difficult, and if you speak to any of the players that are in my sort of area in the rankings, they'll all say the same thing.
And I know that what I'm saying right now is about to get clicked, and I'm going to back it up.
Two Scotsmen playing each other, they're still saying Scotland get battered, so it doesn't really matter.
Great question. Far too controversial for me to answer. Right, so moving on.
Got a minute. Mr. Controversy. You cause controversy when there's not a question even asked.
When the Premier League is on, that's your best chance, I think, as an outside player, because a lot of the top players won't go to Pro Tours or to Euro Tours. So,
hello everyone, welcome back to the Mission Darts podcast, episode 65. And we got a special guest later on. Alan Souter's coming on later on the podcast. Matt, I want to kick off with the 65. I mentioned it last week. I know you're going to disagree with me. 65 all day long is treble 11, double 16, because you should not be throwing at the ball hoping that you miss it and hit the 25. Agree or disagree?
Well, I'd just start at 25.
Nobody throws at 25. That's you're aiming at the ball.
We used to have a practice game on the 25s. So what used to be was for a pound a leg, because everything had to be a pound a leg. It had to have a reason, or else it's not as purposeful. So a pound a leg, first to 10, 25s. If you miss all three darts at 25, you lose a point. You also lose a point for hitting the ball.
Oh.
And that used to be a practice drill we used to do.
What a weird game.
Well, how many times are you on? 65, you've got two darts.
Yeah. Yeah, I always go 11s. If I hit the single, I go 18, double 18. But yeah, I don't believe in throwing at the ball because aiming at something that you want to miss. So I knew you'd be the other way on that, which is absolutely fine. But you just mentioned a pound, and that's just got me thinking about cash and how we are going to be so screwed if cash disappears. I've gone Trafford Centre at the weekend, which, by the way, don't do that at the weekend ever unless you're a lunatic. It's so busy. I'm buying a Christmas present for my daughter. She's gone. Go in that shop. It's those gold earrings over there I want. They're only like £4 or something. It's one of these. I'm not going to name the shop because it's not fair. But so I've gone in the shop. I've picked the earrings up. I've stood in the queue. The queue is not moving. I've stood there for 10 minutes. A manager comes out back and goes, "Really sorry, one of the tills is down." 5 minutes later, still queue hasn't moved. She goes, I'm like, "Are both tills down?" She's like, "Yeah, it's all gone down. The tills are gone. I've got the money here in cash, love. Can I just give you the £10 for the earrings?" She went, "No, we can't get in the till." I was like, "Yeah, but you can see the £10. I've got the £10. No, we can't do transactions unless we can put it into the till." I was like, "Well, just open the till and put the £10. No, we can't do that. I was like, "Thanks very much. There's your earrings back. Bye."
Just write down a bit of paper. Earrings, yeah. And at the end of the day, just going to scan them all in.
Yeah, no, couldn't do that. So if cash disappears, we're absolutely, the world is losing its mind. Anyway, sorry about that. I just had to get that in. I want to get into it, Matt. You've been playing darts again. Look at that little smile.
Yeah.
Look at that little smile.
So I said that the Super Series went better than I expected. So I thought, let's go play some more. I went to Budapest and got involved, as we mentioned last week. I got involved with the Back End of the World Festival. Played two events over there, the Lakeside World Championship Qualifier and the World Open. Now, the World Open went better than the Lakeside Qualifier in lots of ways. But that first game, so I've gone in there. I mean, welcome back to the WDF. Like, sit outside for an hour, turn up, throw 9 practice darts and you're expected to produce. So the first game averaged 81. I was okay with that. I felt like I played better than the average would suggest. And I knew I was throwing right. For me, it's a feeling. It's a feeling. Round two, 102 average. And it could have been better. It could have been better. And I was like, and I mean, you watched it, didn't you, straight away? You messaged me like, what? Like, how do you do that? And then I averaged 98. You know, so I was really happy. I lost to Jimmy Van Ski in a very poor game. A mismatched darts, but I would say I almost felt going into that game that I was starting to lose my action again. So early on, I said I found my throw. I know how to throw darts. I'm throwing the darts right. By the time I got to that, I think maybe a bit of fatigue was starting to kick in a little bit because by then I'd been playing for about 7 hours, and that's a lot of darts when you don't play much darts. So I just started to lose it a little bit. Lost that one 4-3. Then a couple of issues happened on the Sunday. So World Championship qualifiers, like I said, I did play one good game all day. Really struggled. Kind of knew I was going to get beat at some point. Couldn't find my throw. I think it's good in a way, but I think there's two things. It was physical and it was mental. So the physical side of me, I was struggling with passing the dart. And by that, I've got a video of this when I was doing it at the Super Series as well. It wasn't as bad as this. The darts are in the hand. I grab the dart to pick it up and I hold it and it's not right. So I have to put it down and do it again because it's not right. Now, I see this as a positive. And I see this as a positive for a couple of reasons. I've always said I had to stop playing with slim flights. And I don't know why. I just couldn't throw with slim flights anymore. And if you know, I went to kite, then I went to standard. And I put this down to the hand. Because the reason I now know I'm not holding the dart right is because I can feel in my hand again. I went through a period of time, about 2 years, where I couldn't even feel anything in my finger. Like if I held a pen, I couldn't feel it. Hold a dart, I can't feel the dart. So I was probably gripping it wrong, and I just couldn't feel I was gripping it wrong, which is why I had to change flights. And I said, for some reason, I can now throw with slims again. And that's probably because I can feel the dart. But the downside of that is when I'm holding it, I know if it's not right, because I can feel that it's not where it's supposed to be. So it's good I can feel it's not where it's supposed to be, but the bad news is there's something going wrong that I've probably done now for a couple of years that's probably become a bit of a habit I didn't even realize I was doing.
And I've got to stick up for you. And I don't normally do this, you know, that we always go backwards and forwards, whatever. But I am going to stick up for you now on the podcast because people will be thinking, oh, yeah, he got beat. There was a problem with his grip. Every dart player's got an excuse when they get beat. Matt was texting me when he won to say, my grip's not right. I'm not gripping it. There's something. And I'm like, Matt, you've won. Go and play your next game. Next game he won. My grip's not right. So I'm passing the dart. I'm not gripping it. So he was actually telling me there was an issue when he was winning. He didn't wait until he got beat to come up with this. It was going on from the start of the day. So I'm sticking up for you there that you've not used it as an excuse. It was clearly there from the first game, and you kind of just knew you weren't going to get through the day. You were doing the best you could, but it just wasn't. But I like the fact you're taking a positive on this could be better going forward.
Oh, definitely. And in a way, I think it worked out better, though. It gives me a reason to come back and summit to it. Like, if I would have gone there and just carried on banging in these good averages and these good performances, is that going to bring me away and make me hungry? Is it going to bring me away and make me go, right, I want to do so? Or am I just going to go, I can just turn up and do it on whenever I feel like it? So it's probably worked out quite good. But I did also make some observations, which brings me to things I've wrote down on my phone as topics to discuss. Because not all of these... one of them's darts, two of them aren't. Okay. So here we go. Here's another thing for you guys. In the future, the podcast, and I mean the very near future, we are going to start segmenting. And this segment would be Rant of the Week, which would also bring with it a nice little jingle and little graphic for you as well. So we're going to start jazzing things up just a little bit, not too much. We know we like it raw, but it's going to be raw-ish. Going forward. Right. So first thing, I think I sent you the photo. I went to a lovely barbecue pit. Amazing platter of food. We're in the center of Budapest. It's amazing. We're full. Can't finish this. Table next to us, we're having a bit of a chat with them. They're tourists. They're there on holiday as well. They're full. They can't finish theirs. They ask for a box. And they're putting like ribs in there, chicken wings and things. Why? Why? Right. If you're on holiday in Budapest, right? So you've got a hotel. What are you going to do? Where are you going to warm it up? Why are you carrying around ribs? What do you think is going to happen in 4 hours? You know what? I really fancy some cold ribs, actually. Yeah, I'll have them from early. I'll carry them around with me all day. Yeah, I love slip this in your handbag. I might fancy some cold chicken wings in 3 hours. Oh, don't forget the mac and cheese. We might fancy some hard dried up mac and cheese at 4 o'clock. What on earth? Who does? If you're at home, I get it. I'll take it back for the dog. Yeah. Oh, maybe we'll warm that up for later. I get that. If you're walking around Budapest for 4 hours in 16 degrees sunshine, oh, yeah, I fancy a bit of ribs now, actually. Yeah, I'll have that. What on earth? Who does that?
It must be that I've paid for it. I need to take it. But you're right. Who's going to eat it? I can't even think. Cold barbecue food 2 hours later. No, not for me.
That you've carried around Budapest in a box. Oh, yeah, that's for me, that. Yeah, brilliant. Like, so there's the first one. I've got a few more. You can see where this is going.
Yeah.
Idiots who try and control the internet. One thing you can never do is control the space of which you operate. You control how you operate in it, but you can't control the environment, especially the internet. So I put a video up, and in it had some sort of reference to what had happened in the world of darts. And someone contacted me and went, you shouldn't put that in there because I haven't seen the darts yet. That's your problem. I can't make a darts video because you haven't watched the darts yet. If you don't want to see what happened in the darts, don't go on the internet. Stop trying to control what I do to fit your life.
That's like saying, oh, have you seen that thing on the news? Don't tell me about the news. I've not watched it yet.
But it's not even that, because even that example, you've gone to someone. Have you seen that? I weren't even talking to this person. I was putting out generic things into the space of YouTube on my channel. And it's like, oh, so I can't make content on my channel until I'm sure that you've watched it first. Like, just don't look at my channel. Or if like me, I watch wrestling, right? I love wrestling. If I can't watch the Royal Rumble, I won't go, right, no one should be making content on the Royal Rumble till Wednesday. I'll go, I'm going to have to make sure that I don't go on Twitter. I'm going to have to make sure I don't go on any wrestling sites because I don't want to see who won the Royal Rumble because I want to watch it. That's on me. That's my problem to deal with. I can't contact all these news outlets and go, yeah, you can't be doing that. I ain't watched it yet. That's my problem, not theirs. Stop controlling the space.
Yeah.
There's one more. This is where we go back to darts now. Have you seen the news in regards to the WDF?
No.
The World Championship draw?
No.
Right. First of all, I'll fill you in on that. We'll have this is probably going to give us a discussion about that, and then we'll go.
Don't tell me that. I haven't seen it yet, Matt. Don't start.
In true WDF FBDO style, the Women's World Championship of 24 players has 25 players in it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Let's go with this. So it's got 24. So there was an administrative error and they invited the wrong person. That person then didn't go in the qualifier. And they realized once the qualifier had started that they've invited the wrong person. So they ended up with 24 players. So now the qualifier that was for two places to make the 24-player field gives them a 25-player field. So the two qualifiers that have won the qualifier now have to play a prelim to take the one spot that's available.
No.
Yeah.
No, surely it should have been a random draw and somebody gets a prelim. She can't make... Oh, my God. So they've messed it up and they're not even dealt with it.
Oh, well, I don't know how you do, to be fair. But so that's the issue there. Now, yes, that's a problem. Mm. I don't know how you deal with it. I would be horrified to be the person to have to come up with that plan or that solution. Because whatever you do, it's going to be wrong. Now, how does that happen is the first thing. But what I will go to be, and this is my point. My point is not so much about how it happened or why it happened or what the solution is. Mine is in regards to, not you guys, because you guys who listen to this, you know, you're darts fans. I'm on about, this has opened up a lot of debate and a lot of conversation, and I just don't get it, right? All I see all year round on forums, on chats, no one cares about the WDF. WDF's terrible. No one cares. No one's buying tickets for Lakeside. But all of a sudden, everyone's got an opinion all of a sudden on it. That's the bit that gets me. Like, if you don't care about it, why do you care something's gone wrong? So if you don't care that something goes right, but you care when something goes wrong, but here's my big point. I think we've just discovered that the WDF has a lot more fans than they realize. Because if you care that much that something goes wrong, you're invested. Whether you want something to be successful or you want it to be failed, if you care about something, you are emotionally invested to the product. The WDF has a lot more fans than we realize. And I think that's an interesting topic here, because if this happened on the ADC, I don't think as many people would be that bothered, because the ADC is quite new. It doesn't have that history, that longevity, where people either want it to be successful or fail. And that's where we've now got that conversation, which we'll get to again in a second, in regards to ADC or WDF, who is the flagship of amateur darts right now. And I think what we're seeing is the WDF has a larger scope and fan base. And that comes off the back of that, because the second sort of outrage, thousands and thousands and thousands of posts, because people still care.
Yeah. Do you know what? This feels like a podcast on its own. I was looking at the players at the World events that you, I forget what it's called, the World Series or whatever it was called that you've World just Festival. Been to. Yes. And because the Masters was on as well, right?
Yes.
Masters, World Open. Yeah. And I was looking at a severe lack of English names that I knew. Because it was in Hungary, that's an expensive trip for a lot of people to play. So if it was in Wigan, you would expect 200 British, English, you know, people to be there playing. The fact that it was in Hungary, it was Hungarians, Italians, Austrians, Germans, Dutch. And I'm looking down and I'm going, oh, yeah, no, Dave Pallett. Yeah, no, yeah, no, Matthew Edgar. And I'm looking now going, wow, where are all the English names? There really weren't that many there. So that sort of said to me that it isn't as popular as it once was. But then when I looked at the overall number of people, my God, there was a lot of people there, Matt. There's a lot of people there and a lot of boards. Wasn't there something like 80 boards or something?
Oh, yeah. But no practice boards.
Serious organization, that. So, no, it's not dead. People do still care about it. And it's possibly down to the fact it just doesn't get the exposure anymore. It's not on BBC TV anymore that goes worldwide. It's not on terrestrial TV, as we call it. It's not promoted as it once was. I think darts is in a very interesting stage. We've talked about this a lot with MODIS, with ADC, with the WDF, all these competing outlets.
I want to come in there. Darts is at a very interesting stage, and we've talked about the opportunities for players. I'm now going to call out something that I didn't think I would call out and something I don't think I should be calling out, but it's reality. It's reality. We know in regards to the PDC, BDO, WDF, we know what's in place there. Now, it's been that way for years. I believe there's a Tomlin order in place. We know the PDC contract. Why in amateur darts are players having to make choices? Amateur darts is meant to be for... You should never outside of the PDC have to make a decision. You shouldn't. Mm. And now organizations through body part measuring are forcing us to make decisions as players. And it's wrong. And, you know, I will be... This isn't even an opinion. This is a fact. It is wrong. And I know that what I'm saying right now is about to get clicked. And that's, I'm going to back it up. I'm going to back this up for you. So, first thing, the PDC contract states you cannot play in a tournament that uses the word world in its title, which I believe was the reason behind the ADC going ADC Global Championship, to avoid any complications that may exist in regards to WDF World Championships and all those sort of different things. So we've got a Global Championship and a World Championship and then the PDC World Championship. So why do people have to pick between them? Why is the Global Championship not at the same time as Lakeside? Why do amateur players have to make that choice? And scheduling could work around it. However, it has been decided now by, I believe, the ADC side of the organization, they will not allow players to play in both. Can't play Lakeside and the ADC Global. You have to choose. And I've got a statement here to read. I'm going to read it in its entirety because I understand people like that. Well, certain people do. This is a statement from Jensen Walker. And he says, so I've had plenty of messages from all different people about myself to choose between the WDF World Championship and the ADC Global Championship. After confirming qualifying for Lakeside in Budapest this week, it's been a really frustrating 7 days for myself as I have put as I've been put into an ultimatum that no player away from the PDC Pro Tour should ever have to go through. And it's gutting for me to take. And with you, Jensen, I agree. I've worked my backside off to qualify for the Globals through the Modus system. He has. It's a very, very hard system. And that amount of travelling and hard work I've done to get myself to Lakeside has been huge as well. I've had sponsors who supported me in both systems, and for the system to not be able to work around three people playing in both is bitterly disappointing. Jeff Smith had to make the choice as well, Lakeside or ADC. I can't remember who the other person was. With that being said, I can now officially announce that I will be choosing Lakeside over the ADC Global Championship. And to be honest, I'll never know if I made the right decision. If I look back in a year, this has been my year in terms of the progression and development. Is it really my fault I've qualified for two World Championships? You haven't. You qualified for World Championship and the Global Championship. The wording's very different.
Yep.
And that contractually makes a big difference, trust me. Contractually, calling it a global or a world is big, big difference. Oh, I don't know, I've clicked off it. 2 seconds. Let's go back to that. I'm devastated as I never wanted to turn down any world championship. You haven't, you've turned down a global. Very, very important information. I've said my piece now anyway. Anybody that knows me, I generally keep my opinions away from social media, but I found it difficult as it's been a mentally grueling week to enjoy. Remember, Jensen Walker's what, 18 years old? Why is he put in this position? So I'm not going to read the whole thing because he's now talking about his draw at Lakeside and things like that. Why is an 18-year-old amateur dart player having to make a choice like that? Why is darts? You've got 128 tour card holders that have got restrictions. They are classed as professional dart players. They have made that choice to go to Q school to win a card knowing the restrictions. Players like Jensen, players like Jeff Smith, they should not have to make choices. They are amateur dart players. Why are organizations putting themselves and their measuring of body parts above what is best for the player?
Great question. Far too controversial for me to answer. Right. So moving on.
Hold on a minute. Mr. Controversy. You cause controversy when there's not a question even asked. And I'm asking the question. I want an answer.
You should be able to play in all of them, Matt. You should be able to play in any amateur event you want. That's what they are, amateur events. Should be
it's
no
in
restrict.
The title, ADC, yeah. Amateur Darts Circuit. Amateur Dart Circuit, we're darts ridiculous. For everybody, unless you qualify for Lakeside.
Yeah, ridiculous. Yeah. But you segmented me perfectly to a question. You're absolutely, like, without even knowing. From Dylan. Dylan sent a question to Matt. Says question to Matt. Do you think the number of tour card holders, 128 in brackets, will ever increase?
Yes.
Okay. And I've got a take on this. So I want yours first. Yeah, go for it.
I don't think the Pro Tour in its current state will be how the Pro Tour exists within the next 10 years. We will have two Pro Tour systems. And I believe we'll have a worldwide tour that will be hosted in Asia, in America, somewhere else. And there will be an England and Europe-based Pro Tour. And I think that's the direction. Now, I don't think they're going to go completely 50-50, where you get 32 qualifiers from the UK, 32 qualifiers from there. I think it'd be like 48 and 16 or something like that to begin with, and eventually it'll sort of integrate into a 50-50 split. But certainly within my lifetime and within my time within the sport, I am very confident that we will have more than a 1-to-8 tour system that only operates in the UK and Europe.
Do you know what quickly came to mind when I read that? To me, we've talked about this till we're blue in the face about the Challenge Tour and how there's not enough places from the Challenge going to the main tour. Why not simply give out 120 tour cards, and the other 8 are from the players in form on the Challenge Tour every week?
We've so kind of got that anyway.
But I know we kind of, they get in when players drop out, but I'm saying 8 plus the dropouts, so you end up with 16 or something like that. The way I'm looking at it now, you are playing unbelievable darts, right? And I know you're going to Q School for different reasons. You're not going to get a tour card, but let's say you were. You are that guy that just happens to get the bloody flu on the day that it's the most important day of your year. And you've been playing unbelievable darts. You get the flu. You don't get a tour card. But then the Challenge Tour starts and you're the man in form. You should be getting on that Challenge Tour like Ratajski did and giving yourself a chance to get full playing benefits by play. You know, here's your chance. Go and take it. Right. Okay. You didn't take that chance. Here's another chance. Right. You've had 4 or 5 chances now. You're not doing anything. Carry on the Challenge Tour. Not fair to me. That happened. It's not. To a point, it happens.
But Lee Cox, it happened. So Lee Cox was playing well.
If you got ill, Matt, that's what I'm saying.
Lee Cox. So he was playing really well, won a Challenge Tour, was getting Pro Tour invites, was having a few wins on the Pro Tour, played the darts of his life, got ill, didn't even attend Q School because he was poorly, had special dispensation that he could play the Challenge Tour again this year despite not turning up because he was very ill. It was a serious illness for him. And back on the Challenge Tour again. Missed his chance at Q School where he was probably been one of the favourites the way he was playing.
To get a card. And now he's got to wait another year before he gets another chance. It's not right. It's not right. But no, I'm glad you answered that.
There's one more thing I will add to this conversation.
Yeah.
People talk about potential of growing the Pro Tour beyond the 128. Absolutely, categorically not for me. And I don't think for a while. And I have a very, very strong stance on this. And that is in the fact of, right now, the Pro Tour does not support 128 players. It supports a full-time wage now at least 64. If you're in the top 64 and you're not able to be a full-time professional dart player, the problem's on you. You're spending too much, your lifestyle's wrong, or you're stuck in some terrible deal. It's your fault you're not a professional dart player if you're in the top 64 in the world now, because you should be earning enough to live a very good, comfortable lifestyle. Regardless of circumstances, because there's not many people that will be earning more than a top 64 player, certainly next year, like in a standard career. So yeah, absolutely. In the top 64 full time, I would say maybe even stretch down to 80, but we're not supporting 128 players yet. So until a full 128 players are able to be full-time professionals, I never want to see that tour expanded.
Could we ever go to the stage like golf, where you have several tours going on around the world? So potentially you have 200 PDC professionals with a contract, whatever you want to call it. And you've got the English, whatever it is, the English Open, that if you're in the top 64 in the world, you can get in it. And if you're not, there's one in Asia the same week, but the ranking points aren't quite as high. So this goes on in golf, where if you're in the top 24 in the world of golf, you can play in any tournament in the world you want. You pick and choose because you've earned that right. If you're a little bit lower down and you've not made it into the big tournament, well, that's okay. because there's a secondary tournament in Germany this week. And if you win it, you're jumping up them rankings. It's the same in tennis. They have the ATP tour and they have the 500 and whatever it is.
No, not at all. I think the closest we'll ever get to that is a world where you don't have to play the top 32 in the opening game, because the top 30, we know the PDC love a seeding system. I think the most opportunity you're going to get is we get a seeded player start a round ahead, and then everyone else plays the first round, and then the seeds come in around later. I think that's possibly the way I'd see it going more than anything. So, you know, you've got your boards at the moment, a seed plays this person. We just have a seed starting, and there'll be a game to play the seed.
Which is like the World Championship, isn't it? Because the qualifiers play before they get to the seeded players. Yeah.
Old system of World Championship. Yeah, but that's how they moved extra players into the Worlds without having to go, right, 64 to 128. I think that's how the tour will expand from 128 to whatever that'll be, about 150-odd or something. That will be the way it grows. It certainly won't grow double. And I certainly think if there is expansion, it will be using the world rather than using the current system. I think at the moment, the current system's right.
Okay, that's fair. Right, I've got a couple of really interesting ones. I know you've got some topics as well. I've got a couple of interesting ones here.
I've done my topics.
Oh, you've done yours. So Bart from Belgium has been on, Bart Dellens. Thank you for your email. And he just asked me to check out the following video, which I did. And he wants to know, does this count? So I can explain to you what was in the video. And this is, and you may have seen it or you may not. And this is a guy in a game that needs 32. He's left 32. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
And his first dart goes in double eight. And his second dart comes in, knocks the double eight out, and goes into double 16. Has he won the game? I think he has.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, he has, yeah.
He's won the game.
Yeah.
Because that 16 no longer counts, because it's not, you've not ended your throw. Now that's different. People were saying, well, what if you've left 16, but you hit 32? Can't you try and knock that out? No, because you've already bust.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've already
completed. You have seen it, and it is correct that, yeah, if that ever happens, I can't see I've ever seen it happen other than in that video. Quite incredible. So yes, Mart, in answer to your question, it does count. Right. Another question, this time from Germany. This is from Sasha Martin from Germany. And it's quite a long email. He said he's a big fan of Mission. He's got the Oscar Lukusiak darts, which he loves.
Stop picking bits out and read the email, Andy. Don't just cherry pick bits out. Read the whole thing.
Yeah, good reference. I'll read the whole thing then. I'll read the whole thing. As the weather gets colder, this is how it starts. My hands get more dry and I've lost the feeling for my dart grip. I looked at my shelf and picked up the Mission Lukusiak darts, which I bought after they were released because they are a very beautiful set of darts. I couldn't really throw them, but I do like the look of them, and the sandpaper type grip really helps. Now, my thought was, if I'm struggling anyway, why not try and use a set that I like the most? So my question is, and I guess this is a bit of a question for me, do you think you can make a dart you like work for you by getting used to it? Or, as Andy would recommend to me in a precision fitting, do you choose the dart or does the dart choose you?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I kind of don't think I'm the guy to answer this, because we're just talking about grip and not feeling darts in hands, and I haven't quite worked that one out. But maybe this is something that I can answer in about 3 or 4 weeks, because I've now got to figure this out, and this isn't something I've come across before. I've spoke to a lot of players. It's something a lot of people have never really experienced. There isn't a blueprint, so I'm writing the story. So maybe this is something to sort of come back to in a few weeks.
And you are an interesting case, because I've given you lots of darts and you've gone 180. And I'm like, how can you throw 180 with them? They're not suited to you. So you're not the right person. Now, I'm a big believer that the dart chooses you, or rather, if you have a precision fitting, I choose it for you. It's very difficult to adjust yourself to get on with a dart. For example, if I got Matt's darts for the day, I could throw, I would have to change my grip, I'd have to change how I throw, and that's not the way forward. If you've already got a nice grip, you've already got a good throw, you need to find the dart that's right for you. That's my take on that. And I think without further ado, we've kept people waiting long enough, Matt. Let's introduce our guest, Mr. Alan Souter. And here he is, Alan Souter himself. How are you, mate?
All right, Andy. All good. How are you guys? All right.
Looking a bit tan there, Alan. Like, what's that all about?
Nah, I'm in Scotland. I'm just in my dark room and it's a little bit dark. I don't have cool studio lights like you two.
Look, before we get into the darts, I've got a very important question for you, Alan. I think I've been making porridge wrong my whole life. And I discovered this week, I put milk in porridge, heat it up, bit of honey, blueberries, eat it. I've heard this week you're supposed to make it with water.
You do in Scotland,
Is that what it is?
I don't know what else to do in Scotland. They put salt on it and not sugar. That's the original way, but that's not for me either.
This is from a nation of people that batter Mars bars, so I'm not going to listen to that advice.
Correct. I tried it with water this morning. It was awful. I'm not doing that again. I'm going back to milk.
Milk all the way.
Anyway, have you hit 50 yet, Alan? I've got to ask you.
I wish I had, because then I could retire from the fire service. Nah, only 47, 48 in January.
That was going to be my question. I remember speaking to you a while ago and you saying, oh, you know, when I hit the 50, I might have a bit more time to practice and this, that and the other. So I was thinking, I wonder if we've got there yet. But then I realised it's only 6 months since I spoke to you. So it hasn't. But is that still the plan, to continue with the darts? And
yeah, I'm at the end of year five now on the Pro Tour. So I've managed to juggle it with staying at work and keeping my tour card. So I've done all right so far. But yeah, 2 years to go, it's because of pensions and different things like that. So 50 is the magic number for me, and then I can maybe take it serious.
Almost been on the tour as long as Matt was now.
Ooh.
I would say you've probably been on the tour longer than Andy, but most people have.
I hold the record. Nobody else has been on the tour for 4 months.
If you get called up off the challenge tour for an event, you've played more events than Andy. Well done.
Most of the dartboards have been on the tour longer than Andy, and they get changed every day.
Everyone's having a pop at corn all these days.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Don't you start. I've got enough. With pro players having a pop at me, Alan. But no, it's good to see you, mate, as always. Thanks for coming on the pod. We appreciate it. We know your time is super, super precious. And I wanted to catch up really with, well, first of all, how do you think the season's gone so far? Because I don't think it's perhaps as good as you wanted. It started off all right.
Yeah, do you know what? I quantify it always by November, December. So you know you're going to keep your tour card, but also you're going to be in the Players' Championship Finals and you're going to be in Ali Pali. And I've done both of them, so pretty good for me, I think. I'm sitting 54th in the world, which is safe for my tour card. Yeah, I'm not getting the dizzy heights of the top 32 or starting to broach that, but unfortunately, the PDC and the rule changes of the Euro Tours has made it extremely hard to close the gap on the guys in the top 32. So I think I'm one of those players now that sits in that 33 to 64, and that's reality. And I'm not a professional dart player full time. So, yeah.
For context on that, so I've spoke about this recently. You say about things like the rule change and things. It's very interesting because I'm assuming we're talking things like European Tours. Because when we look at the European Tour, I looked at the story of Rob Cross this year. I think it's really just back up your claim there about how hard it is now to climb the rankings. Yeah. So Rob Cross in the European Tour is one of the seeded players, needs to win one match for £4,000. Yeah. So one game for £4,000, and that's not against a fellow seeded player. As someone like yourself, you have to go through the qualifier, which is three matches. You then have to win one game at the European Tour itself. You'll then play one of the seeds, so someone like Rob Cross. And if you win that, you get £4,000. So you're playing five wins to his one to get the same prize money.
And the three qualifying matches are against Pro Tour players. So it's very, very hard.
So when you judge that over a year, so I think Rob Cross got in the Players' Championship on the European on £24,000, which was six wins. So potentially six wins for, if we're working on that ratio, you're what, 30 wins to his six?
Yeah, when you talk about a gap, look at that for a gap, and it's a great illustration of that, Matt. Thank you for that. It really is. I got a wee bit of slagging about it when I spoke out about it on an interview with the PDC, and everyone's like, no, he's right. No, he's wrong. Stop moaning, get better and all that kind of thing. But the reality is it's very hard to close that gap, and it's kind of free money for those guys that are already in the top 32, top 16 in the rankings. So, yeah, it's extremely difficult. And if you speak to any of the players that are in my sort of area in the rankings, they'll all say the same thing.
I never liked that. I'm never a fan of that. So when people say, win more games, get better, because what you do, the issue you've got is you're not changing the conversation, you change who has the conversation. Because if you then go in there, you're like, well, okay, I'm okay with that now. But then someone else is in that position who goes, ow, I've now got to win 32 is six. Yeah. So you don't change the conversation. You're not changing the problem by going, oh, I'll just get better. And yeah, ultimately.
Well, there'll always be people think you're right and people think you're wrong. We know that well.
You do.
There'll always be people agree and there'll always be people that don't. And that's the way of the world. But who have you got? Is the Players' Champs been done now, Alan?
Yeah,
so that then?
It's actually an interesting little story for you. So we were watching the Pro Tour final last week and Luke Woodhouse made the final against Wessel. So if Luke had won the Pro Tour, I was getting Gary Anderson at Minehead. Oh. But Wessel won it, so I get Luke Woodhouse. So still a very hard draw, but imagine, you don't want to play Gary Anderson ever, especially being Scottish, because we all hold him up here and he's our hero. So
yeah, but
that'd have been a tough
draw.
The crowd might have
been a little bit on your side, Alan, because when you go to the Ali Pally, they're not going to be.
Yeah, but two Scotsmen playing each other, they're still saying Scotland get battered, so it doesn't really matter.
Where do you stand on that? Player's perspective here.
For
that draw, because UK Open, Players' Championship finals, events like that, I had two outcomes. I either wanted Phil Taylor, Michael Van Gerwen, or I wanted Andy Cornwall, right?
Yeah.
I didn't want Luke Woodhouse because you get a very hard game, but you're on stage two at 12 o'clock. So it's a tough game with no glamour. And I would rather be on the main stage against Phil Taylor or in the car park against Andy on board 8 at Minehead.
That's a good one if you want the glamour tie on TV, then... Yeah, do you want to finish 64th and just scrape in and get the number one seed off the Pro Tour? Potentially for the fame, but you're not doing it for that, I don't think, or I'm not doing it for that. So the last time I played Luke Woodhouse, I beat him. Yes, he's climbed the rankings a little bit and he's a very, very consistent scorer. But I fancy my chances, I'll go down there and give it a go. But for me, look at all 63 other players in there. It's not really one that you think, oh, that's a good draw. There's not many. So I think it's just... It's where I am. I finished 44th in the Players' Championship ranking, so you get 22 or 21, whatever he is. So I'm going to go down there.
Yeah.
Every time I played there, I played Daryl Gurney, I played Scott Williams when he was flying, I played... Yeah, I've had a tough draw every single time. So
I've seen one or two comments already going, why is Luke Littler drawn him and why is he drawn it? And that's, of course, because they haven't played as many Players' Championships to... I think everybody's expecting Luke Littler to play... number 64, and it doesn't work like that. It's where you are on that Pro Tour ranking, isn't it?
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to the Euro Tour qualifiers and the Pro Tours. So if you think about the Euro Tour, they've done it because they want the top players in the Euro Tours to sell tickets, to be great events in Europe. But they're great events anyway without all the top players. I think people like to see up-and-coming or guys-off-the-floor tournaments coming through and making a TV event. But now, a lot of the guys don't play in them. So they'll take a weekend off or they don't go to Germany or whatever they're saying nowadays. The same thing happens on the Pro Tour, clearly. When the Premier League is on, that's your best chance, I think, as an outside player, because a lot of the top players won't go to Pro Tours or to Euro Tours. So I think there's a conversation around that as well, but it all comes back to the way that they've sort of structured the qualification for these events. So it is a good conversation because everyone talks about it and everyone... backstage and on the floor tournaments, even at a Euro Tour when you qualify, all of sort of the players like myself, Willie O'Connor, Mickey Mansell, Madars Rasma, we all speak about that because we're in that group of players that are affected by the change. So everyone
Okay, there's a couple of interesting points coming up here, and you mentioned about conversations. There's a conversation ongoing right now. This is one that divides opinion. Some people are one way, some are the other. Darts is the best that darts has ever been, true or false? Is it standard-wise never been better? Or are you one of those that subscribe to the fact, like, for me, I think darts is not better than it's ever been. It's more exposed. So when you talk about players like that, Madar's Rasma, we know about Madar's Rasma because I can watch him at Darts Connect. I see him on Euro Tours. I know all these. Cam Crabtree breaking through this year. Everyone knows how good he is because of the development tour, because of the Moda Super Series, because of streaming opportunities, where a player like Cam Crabtree, a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, going to the Grand Slam of Darts, as the everyone would be writing him off. Oh, he's got no chance. Never played on TV. But now we know how good he is because we see it on a regular basis. You're not telling me people that were debuting in the Grand Slam years ago weren't this good.
We had a conversation last week in Wigan about actually going back to Eric Bristow, Jockey Wilson era, and talking about has the standard got so much better? But I think they played on staple dartboards. They played on lesser equipment, thicker tungsten. So all that narrative that it's better now, is it? Eric Bristow was still an amazing player. Jockey Wilson, John Law, they were still the top in the world, but technology moves on, just like golf. You know, golf balls, equipment, it changes.
Yeah.
So the players can hit it further. They seem like they're better players. But, yeah, I'm older as well when I'm at my mat, so I'm not Cam's age. But I actually spent time with Cam when we were down at Mission in Bolton doing the videos last week with you. So it's the first time I really spent a lot of time with him, and he is on it as a dart player. He's going to become the next sort of level of player, winning the development tour, and he's just focused on being the best. So I see good things for him in the very near future. But yeah,
you say right thing, Alan. I've said it on the podcast a few times. I'm old enough to remember Eric Bristow. You two aren't. But he averaged 97.5. 2 years running in the final of the World Championship on staple boards with thicker tungsten, bounce outs galore off the wires, and still average 97.5. You bring that forward to today, I think that's a phenomenal standard.
So
to me, my take on that is, has darts got better? Not at the top, but there's now, it's filling up more at the bottom. So I think in those days, you had your Bristow, Jockey, John Lowe, Lazarenka, maybe 25 elite players, but then the ones below them perhaps weren't at the level of what you're at, of what Matt was at, etc. That sort of next level. Yeah. There wasn't as many of those about because you couldn't really make a living at that level. I mean, I know it's hard now, but you certainly couldn't in them days. If you weren't in the top eight, you weren't making any money out of darts. So that's potentially what it is. But yeah, I think people forget how good those guys were. Go back, watch those finals with Bristow in. It's you know, it's pretty special. That being said, they were playing through the smoke in them days. You know,
the whole package. The whole package is better now. The whole environment around darts is better.
Well, two pieces of context. First of all, Phil Taylor's the only player who runs at a career average of 100. We look at the darts nowadays, we've got one player whose yearly average is over 100. One.
Yeah.
And I've been following stats for the last 2-3 years where I've been working in a punditry role, and there's only one player who has ever run over 100 average during that period of time. And that's Luke Littler. Gary Anderson came very close. Luke Humphries came close, but they never ran over 100. And the other thing, Alan says there about the equipment being better, not that it affects him. Remember these, Alan?
Oh.
Where's the camera? How on earth did you do? It says about equipment being better. There's coming to the main Mission channel soon. 72-gram darts. We said no one will ever hit a 180 with them. Alan Suter about four throws in on camera. You'll see that footage very soon.
And do you know what? If I had to pick somebody, it would have been Alan because he has the thickest Mission dart going.
I was just going to say, because we know about Matt Edgar's darts available in 21, 23, and 25, but Suter's darts available in 22, 24, 26, and 28.
And 72. So,
and 72. Get them out in suits, get them blue and send them out there because nobody's hitting 180 with them, Matt. Nobody.
Someone nearly did actually the day after. I weren't bad with them, to be fair. yeah, that's yeah, coming over the Christmas period. You're going to get some nice content with the 72 grammars.
It's good
yeah,
fun that day. Look,
I wanted to ask Alan, I've never asked you this before. You've got to have a standout favourite moment. We all know it's Matt Edgar's 170 against Gary Anderson to be
the match.
We've heard that story. You've got to have one. You must have one that sticks in your mind.
I don't know, because every tournament that you qualify for on TV feels like a massive deal when you're not in them all the time. So two last 16s at Ali Pali is massive for me, but the Grand Slam was pretty special. To come through the floor and qualify is very hard. So to get beat Stephen Bunting on the floor to qualify in a last leg decider, then to get a run to the quarterfinals in that event is, you know, I think we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, we were down there 10, 11 days in Wolverhampton. So that feels very special that I managed to, you know, get to the last eight in a major. It's pretty cool for someone at my level and my ranking. So, yeah, I know everyone in that room's got the game, but a wee bit of longevity in a tournament and to do all right in the groups and then to win a game against Johnny Clayton to make the last eight is just pretty cool. I think Grand Slam's a cool moment, but I always go back, get asked this quite a lot, I always go back to WDF days because we won the World Cup team event as Scotland. And as a team and as a nation thing, it's pretty special. It's a pretty special moment for the guys in that team and for everybody else in your country, you know. It's cool.
And you didn't mention there your Pro Tour win, which I thought was going to be quite high up there. You've been the best in the world there. Are you prefer a stage or do you prefer behind closed doors?
Probably stage, and even on the streaming boards, I quite like the streaming board rather than the floor board. So I'm a bit different. So like a lot of people talk about Cammy's floor game or Wessel's floor game compared to the stage games, which I think I'm the other way around. I like the crowd. I like even the barracking that you get from them. I quite feed off that and quite like it. So Pro Tour win, of course, if when they look back over it, go at least he won something in the PDC. But again, if I go back to the players not attending events, it was in Hildesheim. It was Pro Tour 11. So you were in the middle of the Premier League. So was everybody there? I was the best player in that.
I think you're being harsh.
I know, but I was the best player in that room that day, not necessarily the best player in the world. So I'm pretty honest and open about things like that. You know, if Luke Little and Luke Humphreys and other players weren't there, MVG was there, so I'll take that one. But everybody wasn't there. So.
And what do you think of Mr. Redger playing a bit of darts, Alan, lately? What's that all about?
I can't say anything because I've played him once and lost in the PDC. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. He's never mentioned that.
I remember it very well because Alan came on the tour and I always used to sit around the 60 sort of position. I was always like, I called myself like a gatekeeper. The standard of the tour was what I used to always say. Because when you look at how good you need to be a professional dart player, you never used to, you didn't look at it and go, can I beat Luke Littler? That wasn't what you should be doing. You should go, can I beat Matt? Because it's his position I'm trying to take. And when Alan came on the tour, he was playing bloody well. And he was beating everyone. And I went, this is going to be one of those guys that's come and challenge me for my position. And I was like, I want to play him because I want to. And I used to love identifying them. Ease one, ease one, ease one. And I'd be like, right, I need to beat those. And the tournament before, I identified Kieran Tehan. Yeah. I thought at the time he was looking like he was coming through. And I bashed him 6-0. And I was like, right, I've got and Harry Ward. I played him the same tournament, actually. Wow. And I beat him with the 170 finish. Weren't as exciting as Gary Anderson, though, unfortunately. But then I sat down that night because I was a proper stickler for it. And I'd be like, right, who's next? Because in my mind, once I beat them, I was like, right, tick them off. I can get them. And then I was like, this Alan Souter looks good. And then it was in Coventry. Yeah. And it was drawn on the same board. I think Alan beat the seed.
Yeah, I beat, is it Keegan Brown, maybe? Or maybe you beat Keegan Brown. I can't remember who we beat before, but I beat someone before to play you.
I think I beat Mike Dedeker the game before.
He wouldn't have been a seed at that point, yeah.
So, yeah. And then it came up and I'm like, yes, this is the one. And we had a bloody good game, actually.
Yeah, it was a good game.
It was a good game. And it was one of them. Like, I'm not one that always celebrates things. But when the double went in, it's like, yes, like...
Because... I actually went back to the hotel that night and contemplated chucking darts. I was going to give up.
I was going to say, as he's got his darts back out again, there could be a rematch and I'll mark.
Oh, 100%. We both need to play with 72 gram darts, though.
Yeah, I got a message of Andy the other day because I went to this tournament and like I haven't played much at all like in over a year, and I've gone to the tournament second round 102 average. He's like, what?
I'm like, yeah. I was watching it on Darts Connect. Yeah, he's putting the scores in wrong here. Something's gone wrong on the computer here or something. He can't be averaging 102.
He's still got a game in there. Don't let him pretend that he's not played for over a year. Just he's still got it.
Yeah, he's probably practicing 2 hours every day. He just never tells anybody.
Yeah, because days are 26 hours long.
They need to be.
Oh, God. Well, look, Alan, we wish you the best players champs coming up for you. World champs, obviously, two biggies for you. Can make or break the end of the year, can't they, at the end of the day? Let's hope for a favourable draw in the Worlds and a good run in the players. And then you just never know. You know, I remember, where did you get to in the Worlds? What's your best in the Worlds?
Last 16, 2 years in a row, so not bad. If you have a run like that this year, it's a big, massive jump. So.
See what I have to deal with? Payday. Alan, see what I've got to do? Can we do the podcast again? You mentioned that. You had twice to last 16. You mentioned that earlier. He never listens. Yeah. Never. If we do the podcast again...
No, I do listen. You just forget that I'm 54. I'm struggling to remember his name at the minute.
Yeah, but Andy's also, he's thinking about what he's going to do after darts. So we've had conversations off screen, Matt, and he's going to open his own car park in Brighton, an ice cream shop.
Brilliant.
I wish I had a car reference. Park in Brighton. I'll do it for £6 an hour.
And I'm doing ice creams for £3.
You can park all day for that in Scotland.
£7 an hour. 33. Oh, there's going to be some ranting going on this week. I've got three topics.
I was crying, laughing at you telling the missus to hurry up, get up. Look, £7 an hour.
Yeah. She was sat there, right, and she goes, "Oh, I've just got to let my dinner go down." And I'm like, "No, come on, we're going." And she's like, "Oh no, I don't want to just eat and go." She's still like chewing chips, like, "Come on,
on the go." all good.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Alan. Thanks very much. We wish you well. Get back on that practice board. Put out a few fires, look after them dogs, and we'll see you soon, buddy.
Cheers, guys. Have a good day.
What do I need to do? Because he's still there.
He'll just log out when he's finished.
I can see him still talking. I think he thinks he's still... Oh, no, he's gone.
Some great points there. It's quite interesting as well, isn't it, digging into sort of the mind of someone like Alan. But... isn't it that thing, like, you know, as a player, like, you're always really harsh and critical on yourself, aren't you? And you're always probably, you kind of don't want to accept. It's weird that he doesn't really accept that Pro Tour win, isn't it, as something that was a big, because the players wasn't there.
Yeah. And that's almost what other people say. Oh, yeah, well done on winning the Pro Tour, but I see the big names weren't there. But he kind of openly admitted it himself. He was kind of like, yeah, it's not as good as I wanted it to be. And I thought... that was a very honest thing to say. I thought that would have been his kind of highlight moment, because it's a big thing. And winning a Pro Tour does get you into things, doesn't it?
It opens doors and opportunities. And I wouldn't say it was a very honest thing. I'd say it was a very harsh, critical.
On himself.
Self-critical sort of thing to say. Yeah, I was very surprised. Like, if I won a Pro Tour, I'd probably have it tattooed on my forehead. Like, and I wouldn't care if on my way over... like there was a delay on the plane that the 127 players couldn't make it and they had to fill it with local players from wherever we were, where the highest person averaged 42. That title says the same thing. Chris Mason says it, doesn't he? They don't put averages on trophies.
He's absolutely right, isn't he? He's absolutely right.
And Alan played that day. I called it.
You mentioned, I think you mentioned Luke Humphries the other week. We've all had days where we've not played our best, yet you've still won the trophy at the end of the day. And we've all had days where you're like, oh my God, I can't play any better than that, and I'm out. You know, so yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the W that matters. It's not the 97.95 that you averaged that you got beat. That's really not important. So really good insight from Alan. I'll be really interested, Matt, in a couple of years. And I'd like your take on this. Once he gives up the firefighting, once he's got all day every day if he wants to practice, and he's still a young guy and he's fit as a flea, does he suddenly make inroads? Does he suddenly get in that 32 he's always wanted to be in because he's putting more time in? Or because it becomes his job, does it put extra pressure on?
I'm not sure it's extra pressure, but I do think, like, so I'm torn on this one. I really am torn. I don't know what's best for Alan in this situation because Alan lives a very, very busy lifestyle, as we know. You know, there's 24 hours in a day, and I think he's up 28 of them. So it's a very, very busy lifestyle. But when you wake up in the morning and you get out of bed, you go, go play some darts. It'd be great for a few days, like on holiday. It's great going on holiday. But then after a few days, it's like, well, what do I do now? Like, I'm not 100% sure that it could be a benefit. It really, really could be. But it might not be as well at the same time. So it's one of them where I just don't know. And only time will tell.
Yeah. Yeah, we've a couple of years to wait for that. And we'll see what happens in the meantime. He's got two big tournaments coming up. So we haven't mentioned the Grand Slam at all today, Matt, have we?
Well, do you want to play a game?
That brings me... Hang on a minute before we play the game. You're £10 up. I've given you one more chance to double that and make it a £20 a score. I will hand that over live on the podcast to you if you can pick the winner of the Grand Slam.
And I only get one player.
You get one player to get that £20 off Mr. Corbin.
I'll take the tenner.
Oh! He's called it quits at the £10. Of course you have. Of course you have. Yeah. And do you know what? He's the sort of person, he won't actually take it off me. He'll just say, you're forever in my debt. You owe me £10 for the rest of your life.
Oh, no, I'll take it off you. I'll happily take it off you.
And what are you going to do? Go to Brighton, use it for parking for an hour?
Get an hour's parking on that, yeah.
And an ice cream. Oh, no, you've not got enough for an ice cream.
No.
Right, go on then. Hit me with your game. I'll pay you.
This is a game which I think we might have played before, and I used to do it on my own YouTube channel, and it's called WikiWiki Darts.
Oh, we have played it before, yeah.
Yeah. And if you are new, WikiWiki Darts, how WikiWiki Darts works, I'm going to read out the achievements on Wikipedia of a dart player of the past, and Andy Cornwall needs to name that dart player. I will give him the best achievement of the player, along with the year of which that achievement was made. And this one, I've got lots of things for you. Try and listen out for things that are quite key in here. Some of them will blend in. The player.
I'm not sure I got any last time.
Played in the World Championship on multiple occasions. The best they reached was the quarterfinal. That was in 2007. Oh. World Match Play, last 16, 2008. Three World Grand Prix, last 16, 2008, 2010, and 2012. But they did reach a major TV final. That was the UK Open. The year was 2009. Grand Slam of Darts, last 16, 2010. European Championship, last 16, 2009. The winner of the Champions League back in 2009. Desert Classic, so think about that sort of era. 2007, last 16, and a Players Championship Finals 2010 semi-finalist. So a semi-finalist of the Players Championship Finals, a runner-up of the UK Open and a winner of the Champions League, also picking up four Pro Tour titles. Who is the mystery player?
I think I've got it.
Okay.
Mark Dubridge.
No.
Oh!
I was with you. I was like, he's going to get it. Come on, Andy. Oh, come on, no. Andy. Let us know in the comments section if you got it right. The winner, or the right answer, should I say, was the wizard, Colin Osborne.
Or, as he's now called, Ozzy.
No, he's back to the wizard again.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Is it right the PDC made him change because they wanted Simon Whitlock to be the wizard? Is that true or false?
No, I don't think so. Although they have made people change recently, haven't they? The magnet and the master.
The magnet. Yeah, the helmet. That's a new one.
All right, so next one. I've got one for you.
Okay.
This one's got longevity and deep runs. For example, two-time World Championship quarterfinalist. That was in 2011 and 2015. two-time World Match Play quarter finalist, 2009 and 2020. So 11-year gap there between those World Match Play quarterfinals. World Grand Prix quarterfinal 2015. Runner-up of the UK Open again, 2007. Grand Slam of Darts, played in it 6 times, never got out of the group stage. European Championship quarterfinalist, so that's 4 quarterfinals. 5 if you include the Masters in 2016. But think of that longevity. UK Open runner-up in 2007, 2016, Masters, World Series Finals 2021. So we've got good runs here dating like 14 years. Semi-finalist of the Players' Championship Finals in 2014. So regular in the quarters and the semi-finals as their best runs along 15 years of time. Who could that be? But doesn't have a TV title.
Still playing or not?
Well, you don't get, this isn't Wiki Darts plus 3 questions. Your clues are in their achievements.
Oh.
So while Andy thinks, for our audio listeners who have got nothing to listen to right now, I'll run you through that again. Key points. Runner-up 2007 UK Open. Semi-finalist of the Players' Championships in 2014. Quarterfinals of the Worlds, the Match Play and the Grand Prix, which spans across a 11-year period. Champions League of Darts.
Is it classic?
Go on. I'll let you have 2.
Mervyn King. What? Why are you not saying anything? Have I got it?
And wait, that's one player.
And Steve Beaton.
It's neither of them. Because if it was Steve Beaton, I'd have said the winner of the World Championship.
No, because I thought you'd admitted that. I thought that'd make it too easy. So I thought you were just doing PDC titles.
And if it was Mervyn King, I'd say the winner of the World Masters.
Oh, the UK Open runner-up's got me.
Well, you've had your guesses. You're not getting a third. The answer is Vincent van der Voort.
Oh, Vincent.
Okay, we've got one more for you.
He was the fastest player at the time, wasn't he? What was his nickname?
Vincent van der Voort. It was
something to do with speed. Yeah, something to do with speed, wasn't it? Vincent van der Voort.
Okay, you got one more go. Chance to redeem yourself. I'm going to start off by saying this is a winner of multiple PDC Pro Tour titles, but didn't really get it right on the TV. So won Pro Tour titles in 2004, 2005, 2007, 2009, 2010, and 2011. So would have been around the time you was looking to get on the tour as well. World Championship, made his best run 2011, 2006 as well, last 16. World Match Play, last 16. World Grand Prix, quarterfinalist on 3 occasions. UK Open, last 16 on 3 occasions. One of those you played in. The 2011 UK Open, last 16. European Championship, last 16. Desert Classic, 3 times have performed. Best TV run, though, a quarterfinalist. That in 2011 in the Players' Championship Finals and in the World Grand Prix. So never got beyond the quarterfinals in any TV stage, but won 6 Pro Tour titles. Who is the player?
I've got a name. I don't think it's right. But if I don't say it and it was right, I'll never forgive myself.
Go on.
So I'm going to say Wes Newton.
Wouldn't I have said European Championship finalist then on Wes Newton?
Oh, are you actually reading or every UK single thing they've ever done?
Oh. This is round 3 and you're still not getting it. UK Open runner-up, Wes Newton? Like, there would have been legendary.
The 6 Pro Tours got me.
You are nowhere near. You are a mile off. You got it wrong.
Peter Manley.
And he's won things. He won the Desert Classic.
And he was World Championship.
And he was in the Premier League. I never said this player played in the Premier League. Yeah. 2-time World Championship runner-up, Peter Manley, who's never got beyond the quarterfinals. Yeah, really good at this game, aren't you, Andy? Oh, my God. Right. It's an awful effort.
Hang on. Let me.
Pull this out.
Dennis Smith.
Oh, as if.
Is it honestly?
No. It's Andy Smith, the pie man.
Is it Andy Smith? Andy Smith. Used to love Andy's action.
Once again, Andy, playing a game, you've embarrassed yourself. I think we should call it there. Difficult. And hopefully next week you'll be able to get a little bit better, because games and quizzes are going to be on the podcast on a regular basis. And hopefully,
you know,
Andy,
next week's pod's called
embarrassing himself. The Mission Darts Podcast, Root. Episode 66.
It's called Root. Root.
66. Okay.
Thanks for watching. You'll get it one day.